This is the Uncover You podcast, and I'm Eva Berunius. I'm here to help you navigate your transformational journey so you can experience the you underneath the conditioning and unconscious beliefs. You always find the show notes over at selfmasteryandbeyond.com, and you're welcome to join me live for these sessions over Zoom. Let's get to the core of things. Here's today's episode. So, in our last session, when we talked about connecting with pleasure as a good skill for both expanding that program of your mind that you've been inside and start dreaming outside of it, and also using it as an artist skill, as a way of creating the life that you want, there were some really good questions that I wanted to get to. So in this episode, I'll dive a little deeper into the topic of pleasure and see if I can bring some more clarity to the difference between our mind's idea and attachment to pleasure and pleasure from integrity. So it's completely natural that when we've been identified and pulled along by our mind program our entire life, that it's hard to tell the difference between desires and wantings from integrity and attachments to pleasure as an escape, as a distraction, as an addiction, as a compensating strategy. So this is where you first of all need to learn the skills to step outside of the stories of your mind, the stories that your mind is running, to observe them. And that's, of course, what you do in Self-Mastery Course 1. So again, I'm going to repeat that. If that's where you are at and you're just getting started with this work and you're learning those skills, that's exactly where you need to put your attention. Because without that skill of stepping outside of them, there's not much you can do. Your attention will keep getting pulled along by them again and again. So if that's where you are, keep practicing that. Because what happens there is that you turn the tables. So instead of your attention being pulled along with them, you start stalking. You start hunting them, observing them, instead of constantly being pulled along by them. You start looking at what is pointing, who is screaming, instead of doing what the mind, these parts are telling you to do. And when you have the skills to inventory them, inventory some of these stories, and seeing what kind of unconscious beliefs that are driving them, that there's something underneath that drives these stories and these emotional reactions, well, now you will start to recognize the components of a fear-based mind structure. In other words, you'll start to recognize when the mind has an attachment to an object or an experience out of fear. We need to get this or else something bad is going to happen. Or when the desire for an experience or an object is about expansion and enjoyment from integrity. So what do you do about the mind's attachment to pleasure that might be there, that you might discover as a part of this structure in your mind? I received a question during the last session. It reads like this: how do you treat the craving for pleasure? I've found that I have these strong desires, either sexual or for objects, but have come to realize that there is little fulfillment from giving in to these. On the other hand, although I know I won't get genuine pleasure, unlike the pleasure of the moment, from these desires, I don't want to repress them since I've had a life of that already and it hasn't worked out too well. Are these cravings able to be addressed at this time? Or since I think they are just a way to fill some void, are they something that needs to be worked on over time as part of an overall program? So let's look a little bit at that question and try to answer some things in there. So first of all, I want to acknowledge that your mind will most likely tell you that there are only two options. Give in to these desires, these cravings, or repress them. Because first, the mind likes to talk in black or white, either or, these ultimatums. That's how it's been programmed often. If you don't do this, that will happen. Like, if I don't give in to them, I have to repress them. That's the only other option that the mind sees. And then second, the thinking mind seldom has this knowledge to change unconscious patterns. It doesn't have that wisdom. It doesn't know how to do that. And therefore, it doesn't see that as an option. It's just operating from inside the box it knows, from inside the program. But it is very possible to change this pattern. So in this question, I hear that there's a realization, this person says, that there is little fulfillment of giving in to them, but there seems to still be this hunt for them. And this person also sees that it seems to be a way to fill some kind of void. So we can see that, okay, there is something there that this strategy of attachment to these pleasures, these desires, is trying to kind of cover up or fix or manage. So there is that insight about that. And I can also, if we read between the lines, there is this a bit of a wanting it to go away. Because the questions start, how do you treat the craving for pleasure? And that in a way is like, okay, I don't really want them here. I can see they're not filling a function that's sustainable or that's something that's really nourishing. It doesn't come from integrity. But my only other option is to repress them, and I don't want to do that either. So what do I do? But there's like this sense of, I want them to go away. So the steps to address and change these patterns, as most things in the self-mastery work, is number one, shift out to that observer of the patterns. And you need a bunch of hunting skills for that, huh? So it's not, it sounds very simple when I say it in one sentence, but there's some skills that comes with that to be able to do that. And you need to practice those skills and strengthen those muscles before you're able to do that. So just to acknowledge that. So shift out to the observer, that's number one. Number two, you go inventory and understand the beliefs behind the attachment. Like, why does it feel so necessary to give in to these desires? Why are the desires put there in the first place? This person mentioned a void that it might be trying to fill. That's exactly where you will go look. What is that void? What is the hole that is trying to fill or cover up? Why was this structure formed? And number three, what I found really helpful is to inventory and understand how different parts of the mind has been relating or reacting to this attachment being there. Because often when it comes to these desires for pleasure in some form, whether that's sexual, whether it's porn or whether it's alcohol or a lot of sweet food, whatever it is that is this attachment, we often have another part of our mind judging it. We often have someone that steps in after we've given in to that desire that comes in and say, now you did it again. You're a bad person. You know you shouldn't be doing that. This means you'll never be able to change, or whatever other kind of moral compass it's trying to give you. So number three, to go in and look at what is the response to this attachment, to this desire, and when you give into it, Is it with judgment? Is it victimization? Oh no, it happened to me again. I don't know what to do about it. The needing to fix it. They're like, oh, we need to do something about this, or cover it up, or hide it from people, create lies around it, create reasons for it, justifications. But those three steps of shifting out to the observer, inventory and understand destruction, inventory and understand the reactions to it happening, it is kind of just a way. And it's not just a way, because it's a great way, but it's a way to set you up for the most important piece, which is number four, acknowledge and allow all layers of the structure to be felt. Which means, for example, releasing the emotions that has been suppressed in there, that has been stored in all the different layers of the structure. And if you feel a little adventurous, you can even go in and acknowledge and start looking for the genius in the structure, in these layers and how they were created, to kind of get exactly what they wanted, to keep you distracted from feeling that emotion that wasn't safe to be felt. And how often this loop of giving into desire, judgment, victimization, which often leads to giving into more desire, how is this perfect machinery of repeating itself and having like a self-sustained program, just feeding feedback loop back into itself again and again. So from that, and that appreciation often doesn't come when we're inside of it. But when we step out of it and we can look outside and we can say, oh my God, that's a pretty impressive like architecture, pretty impressive design. Because you see, the addiction or attachment to these desires, these pleasures itself, it's just a compensating strategy or protection mechanism to avoid some kind of emotion underneath. When you ask it to go away, I don't want you here. Why are you pulling me into this behavior, into this pattern again and again? To the mind, that is like taking away the parachute when you go skydiving, or take away your water when you go for a long hike in the desert. It, the mind, believes that you need it. We need it to keep it in place. That your life, your honor, your safety depend on it. So instead of kind of go into a child at night who's scared of the dark and you just put out the night light and leave them in more fear, instead you go in there and you find out, okay, why is it so important to leave the night light on? Why do you feel it needs to be there? Okay, you're afraid of the dark. What does the dark mean? Well, things are hiding there that I can't see. Ah, why does that feel scary? I feel that what's in the dark that I can't see is dangerous, is going to hurt me. Okay. So now you're getting more information than just don't put out the nightlight. And that's exactly what you need to go do with these structures, to understand them and to be able to better acknowledge them, accept them. So once you see and allow the emotion underneath to be felt, well, that means you're not scared of it anymore. You're not acting, responding to it with the same program that it was put into place with, which was fear. We don't want whatever is underneath to be there, so we need to compensate and avoid it. So once you're not afraid of it anymore, once you approach it from a different perspective, once you go look at it, once you speak to it, once you observe it, well, then the need for a compensating strategy will disappear. So that need, that urgency of giving in to these impulses or desires will not be as strong. So the mind's attachment to pleasure might look like often this ultimatum, you have to do this or else. It's like we can't stand not doing it. And there's this strong impulse in the body that is almost impossible to resist or refuse. And when that shows up with something that isn't, you know, the survival functions of the body, like peeing or drinking water, that we actually like have built-in function of like, yes, go drink water. You need to drink water. I have to get water. But when that shows up for something like, I have to eat this cake, or I have to go watch porn, or I, whatever it is, then that's a sign that there is a strong attachment and a strong kind of survival mechanism that has been created in the brain, that's been manufactured. And also you will recognize these attachments to pleasure by often a judgment of giving into them, a judgment or this utter moral compass, you know, in the mind that says that was terrible, you're a bad person for going and doing that. And often it feels much more like a contraction, like a tension in the body. I have to have this. Then a relaxed wanting. This is something that I want. So those are some things to recognize, like that mind's attachment to pleasure. While on the other hand, then connecting to pleasure from integrity might look more like that feeling of expansion and yes in the body. It's a relaxed wanting more. And it can show up as excitement. It can be like a build-up tension that way, but it's still like, yes, it feels expansive. There's not the fear component to it. And what we talked about in the last episode, that it's often about exploring pleasure in your everyday things. Not so much the mind's idea about what pleasureful things are. Like you can only get pleasure from this or from that or from having this experience. But instead, it's opening yourself up to other things that might be pleasureful that you might not pay attention to. Smelling the flowers or the wind in your face, or drinking that cup of coffee, or just taking your time to be in the now and experience little things fully. And it also often includes stripping those labels, yeah, that the mind is giving to certain situations. Like, this is what pleasure is. This is not pleasure. And instead of interacting to your world and to your experiences from those labels of the mind, you're letting those go, you're letting those fade, or you drop your attention past them through these layers to arrive at the experience itself. Because when the mind is attached to pleasure, it much more often goes into the idea. It has the idea what this will give us, why this is important. So we interact more with the story, the idea, the concept, than the experience itself. But connecting to pleasure from integrity is also acknowledging what your body actually likes, which could also have been suppressed by the thinking mind, by the program of the mind that says that you like that is not okay. That you enjoy being touched like this or experience that, it's not okay. That means something. You're a bad person. You enjoy sexual pleasure, which is shameful. You shouldn't like that. That means you're bad. So there's often shame also about the pleasure that do come from integrity. There are just things that the body enjoys. So when you explore this pleasure from integrity, it's also about allowing yourself to have these quirks or desires that the body do have. And some of them we might not even act out, because it's not so much that all of them needs to be acted out. It's more about allowing and acknowledge that they are there. I have this desire for this, or I feel pleasure when. And like we touched on in the last episode, there are also parts of us when growing up, before getting the conditioning and the punishment for being bad or throwing things at the dinner table. There are also parts of us that do find pleasure in acting out that anger or feeling rage or being a pain in the ass to an adult, to kind of act out our power that way. So there is also part that have this sense of pleasure in feeling that anger or having power over others or manipulating others. And again, it doesn't mean that we are going to live by them or let them rule us, but also acknowledge that that part is there. It feels pleasure from this instead of keep repressing it, pushing it down. So there is this way that we haven't been taught in school of relating to these parts that doesn't have to be an either or. Either I follow them blindly, getting pulled along by them, or I repress them. No, there's a way of you building that inner leadership of holding space for them. You as a container is much bigger than them, and you allow for them to release through you the emotions that's been stored and everything else that might be held down as a knot in there. So I hope this gives a little more clarity, even if it also points again to learning the skills and explore this rather than, oh, here's the manual, just go do it. But I hope that this at least points to where to go look, where to explore, and what skills to practice to change and shift some of the attachment to pleasure that the mind is holding on to, and also explore what that connection to pleasure from integrity might be. So let me know if there are any questions around that. There's a question or observation from Vanda saying, sometimes going to the observer view is difficult because the mind has already made an idea of how it is. Yes. And you seeing that, you noticing it is great hunting skills, because this is also part of the journey. This is part of you realizing just how the mind operates and how you've been used to relating to it. So when you see that it also gets a hold of this work, the self-mastery work, and the idea of an observer, yes, it will create an image of it, because that's what the mind does. It's a storyteller. It's the filter that will allow you to understand the world through the filter of the mind and these symbols of words and pictures. And that's what it does. So as soon as we put observer into a world and a word and we start talking about it, I mean, it's never it. As soon as we start talking about a chair and describe it, the word, the description is never it. So I usually, in this work, talk about two observers or two levels of observers, you could say. One that we create, a character that we recruit, that we say like, okay, you're going to help me go hunt these stories. You're going to help me see these structures. And it's the one that doesn't engage, that doesn't engage in them, but he reminds you or she reminds you to step out and say, wait a minute, what is going on here? What if I look at this from the outside? And that's perfect. You need an ally like that in your mind. When you start practicing your hunting skills, it's perfect. But also notice if that observer, since it exists in the mind, is also open for suggestions. It's open for, we could call it corruption from other parts of the mind. The fixer or the judge might want to get in and try and form a structure with it or recruit it to run its errands. So to keep like observing the observer or stripping the observer from these other agendas, to see when the observer becomes someone that is engaging rather than observing is helpful. So there might be iterations of that observer and you're like, okay, let's strip the observer from another layer that's been put up on it. Or let's make it even more clear and laser focused. So you could say that the skills of this observer will grow as you learn new skills. And it will be able to see more and more structures. While in the beginning, it might see in a few and engage in others. Now it sees I can also step out of that one. So in a way, I would say what you're saying, Vanda, that, oh, it's hard sometimes to step out into the observer because the mind has created an image of it. It's you exactly doing that. It's you upgrading your observer. It's observer, 3.1. It's now you can go, that old idea of an observer I used to have. It's actually something that the mind has created and it might come with some agenda. And what happens if I let go of that idea and upgrade it? What's left? So that's the observer that you'll be using a lot in this work. And then I also talk about a second observer or a different kind of observer that is more US consciousness, which is in a way the great core of the observer or the archetype, the blueprint for the observer, which is beyond the mind, which exists outside of the mind, which exists beyond your physical body, because it can observe also these things. It can observe the sensations happening in the body. It can observe the thoughts in the mind, the activity in the mind, your emotional state. So who is it? Who is it that's observing all these things? And my experience is that these Two, the idea of the observer and that character, that ally that you create when you start this work, and this blueprint of the observer, they're kind of moving closer to each other. Or actually, the idea of the observer is moving closer to that blueprint, that archetype of the observer, as you keep doing this work. So yes, you mentioned here in the chat, like, my clue is that the observer is not thinking, right? Yeah, this observer is not thinking. The one, the version two, the blueprint, the archetype, the one beyond the mind. No, it's not thinking, but your character observer might be thinking. And that's okay. Let it think. As long as it's helpful, helpful thoughts that will help you observe and hunt and stalk these other structures, then use it. So it might be a trap here that, like, oh, I'm not in the real observer. And then the mind goes, that's bad. We're not doing it right. We're not stepping out. It's like, we have a mind, we have characters, we have parts, use them. But you recognizing that sometimes, yeah, we do relate to this observer, we step into the observer, but we actually only step into this idea of it in the mind. You seeing that? That means you have upgraded your hunting skills and your observer skills. 1,000 points to you. Thank you for listening. Do you want to tune in live with me over video next week? Then head over to selfmasteryandbeyond.com for instructions. And if this was helpful to you, I appreciate a review in the podcast app that you're using. Until next week.